Hello and welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network. My name is Jeff Bradbury. Welcome to the third episode of our special summer professional development series, Literacy with Laura. So far, we've looked at the science of reading. Last week was professional learning, and this week we're exploring instruction and assessment. My guest today, as always, is the 95% Group Chief Academic Officer, Laura Stewart. Laura, how are you today? Welcome back to the program.
You know what? I'm doing great, Jeffrey. I'm so excited. You know, we've had some really great questions, and I'm really excited for today's episode.
I am excited, too. We've got three amazing questions. The first one, what is the difference between skills and strategies?
So I thought a lot about this, and I want to simplify this as much as possible and not make it super complicated. So skills are what you can do. Strategies are how you approach doing it. So I want to give you some very specific examples of skills and strategies in the area of reading. So reading skills are what kids are able to do, should be able to do, need to be able to do. So they're foundational abilities that children develop through practice. So let me give you some specific examples. Phonemic awareness. So a skill for phonemic awareness is identifying and manipulating individual sounds in spoken words. So an example of that skill would be recognizing that cat has three sounds, k-a-t. Phonics, the skill might be connecting sounds with letters or groups of letters. So an example of that skill is knowing that the term, the letters sh make the sh sound in like ship. A decoding skill is sounding out words using their letter sound knowledge. So an example would be able to read the word bat by blending the sounds b, a, t. Okay. So those are skills, what kids need to be able to do. They're developed through practice, through instruction and practice. Reading strategies is how kids approach reading tasks. So these are what I consider, you know, kind of, I guess you would say purposeful. They're purposeful techniques to help us understand and engage with text. So let me give you some examples. Predicting is a reading strategy, and that's when students are able to make a prediction or a guess about what will happen next in their text based on the title of the pictures, what has happened so far. So that is a strategy, an approach within text, as a way to understand and engage with text. Visualizing is a reading strategy, and that's creating a mental image of what's happening in the story. Making connections is a reading strategy. That's relating the text to personal experiences or to other texts or to the world. Another strategy is summarizing. That's being able to retell the main points of a story in your own words. So skills... You know, teachers can help our students develop skills of decoding by practicing letter sounds and mastering that. At the same time, teachers might be teaching a strategy of predicting through text by asking, what do you think will happen next in a read aloud? So they're complementary to each other and both critically important in both ability to access text and the ability to understand or think through text.
Laura, that is a fantastic definition of those two skills. We have another question here that comes from a little bit of a debate. The question here is, what percentage correct for oral reading fluency is the acceptable percentage?
You know, you're right about that. That is kind of a debate sometimes among people in our field. And so to answer this question, I went right to an expert to solve this debate. So I went to Jan Hasbrook, and Jan Hasbrook really is a leading voice on fluency. She's a leading voice on oral reading fluency as a measure of accuracy and comprehension, essentially, because ORF, or oral reading fluency, is directly connected to reading comprehension. And so in my conversation with her, she advises us to think about accuracy, and because accuracy, of course, is, you know, first and foremost when we think about fluency and acceptable fluency. And she says, you know, most of the research on accuracy, again, the ability to both decode and recognize words correctly and know what the word means or how it functions, most of the research states that 95% is the threshold for adequate comprehension. However, she says, at least one study says that we need to strive for accuracy around 98%. So studies have revealed that if the meaning of as few as 2% of the words in a text are unknown, comprehension can be significantly impaired. And that's really all about, you know, making sure that we have accuracy with those words and able to, for us to develop the fluency and ultimately the understanding. So I think a way to summarize this is to say a range is a correct answer, 95 to 98%, not a specific precise number, because I always want us to remember that we have to take purpose into account. Comprehension is always the goal, but accuracy needs to be higher when we are, you know, reading for, you know, precise accuracy versus, let's say, reading for pleasure or getting the gist, etc.
Well, that is certainly a good solution to that debate. Now, if anybody's looking for resources on this topic, where would they go to find out more information here?
Yeah, so I think one of my favorite sources is to, you know, mentioning Jan Hasbrook, this book that she wrote with Deb Glazer is a book called Reading Fluency, Understand, Assess, and Teach. And this is really kind of, you know, to me, a great source to go to. It's very accessible, this text is, to really help us understand oral reading fluency, what it is as an assessment. And also, you know, the correct percentages of oral reading fluency. And also this book really supports the importance of accuracy, first, foremost, and forever, as Jan Hasbrook likes to say.
We're going to make sure that we have the links to this and all of our resources over on teachercast.net/literacywithLaura. Ready for our next question?
I am ready, Jeff. Bring it on.
Number three, what are ways we can support our English learners in our ELA instruction?
So Jeff, this is a really big question. And we could, really spend a lot of time on this particular question because there's a lot more to it, but I'm gonna try to answer it pretty succinctly here. I am very fortunate that I get to work with our resident EL expert at 95% Group, Dr. Antonio Fierro. And again, this answer can be very complex. You know, we could go into how do we unpack kind of the oracy and language systems. But I think probably for the purposes of our time today, I can provide a key resource and then some very, very practical tips for teachers to think about. So first of all, a key resource for us is a document called Developing Literacy in Second Language Learners. It was published in 2006. It's a great go-to resource. It's the report of the National Literacy Panel on Language Minority Children and Youth. Now, to summarize, the major point of this document, of this research, is that instruction, you know, we have to provide instruction in those key components of reading as identified by the National Reading Panel. They have clear benefits for English learners. So that really important, solid, evidence-aligned instruction that all of our early readers need are really important for our English learners. The research also suggests that there needs to be adjustments to these approaches and scaffolds to these approaches to really support English learners. So I'm going to give you six takeaways when we think about those adjustments or scaffolds. So number one, always remember that solid, evidence-aligned, explicit instruction is good for all students, including our English learners. And to recap what we mean by solid, evidence-aligned, structured literacy, I recommend people go to the International Dyslexic Association website. Number two tip for our English learners for adjustments and scaffolds is, you know, make sure that we identify that students have a linguistic repertoire, you know, capitalize on that home language, their language skills, and their background knowledge. We don't ever want to diminish what they bring to the table already in language. A third tip would be that oral language is the most important scaffold for our English learners. So making sure that we are engaging in conversation, we're engaging in language, we are thinking about vocabulary as both caught and taught throughout our classroom day. A fourth tip that I would offer is think about how do we provide time for processing responses. Our English learners need opportunities, and actually a lot of our very just early learners need time to process their responses, time for rehearsal of their oral responses, time for additional practice, time for repetition. Those things are really important for our English learners. I would say a fifth tip that I would offer is think about, how do you use visuals? How do you use graphic organizers? How do you use Realia in your classroom to really help make concrete concepts in oral language and in reading? Also, cooperative learning activities have been very helpful, identified as helpful for our English learners. And then the last thing I'm going to offer everyone is, how do we think about establishing what I call high impact, repeatable, replicable routines? That's one of my favorite phrases, repeatable, replicable routines. And these are the routines that we use in the classroom that we use over and over again, so that students can maximize their cognitive energy toward learning as opposed to toward the process. So for example, one of our high impact, repeatable, replicable routines is sound spelling mapping. And if we use this routine over and over again, students are utilizing their cognitive bandwidth to focus on the learning and not focus on what is the routine that I'm supposed to do. So those are just some tips. There's so much more to this, but those are some ideas that I would offer our listeners, ideas to consider.
That is certainly a very comprehensive list. And I would imagine that anybody that's looking to support their English learners would want to make sure that they're hitting most, if not all, of these six items. Where can they go to actually get a copy of this list and learn more about this process?
Yeah. So again, at 95% Group, we have, I mentioned Dr. Antonio Fierro, and he has written on this for us at our website. On our website, we can access some information there. And also, I mentioned the National Literacy Panel on Language Minority Children and Youth, and that's something that people could easily access. Just Google that. It's a free download, and it just provides a nice summary of the research around what we need to do to support our English learners.
Now, we have time for just one more question, a bonus question, if you will.
Bonus.
You
have a couple seconds. Okay. Bonus question.
Here's our last question of the episode. I hear everyone talking about decodable text. Why is it important to use, and what do I look for?
So I love, I'm a huge fan. I'm just going to say that right up front. Huge fan of decodable text. It's text that has a high proportion of words that are phonetically regular. The regular relationship, I would say, between letters and sounds, and decodable text needs to align with the phonetic elements that the student is learning. So it provides, what it does, it provides a reader with practice in the application of skills they're learning in reading. And that's so important. You know, when we're teaching kids about the code and how the code works, we don't want to just teach that in isolation. We have to make sure we're giving our kids opportunities to have success in unlocking the code in real reading. When we use decodable text, it supports their development of what I call the decoding habit, for accuracy and fluency and ultimately extraction of meaning. And it gives them confidence that they can be successful in reading. It's early on. Decodable text is used early on because it's like training wheels. We provide decodable text for early readers. As their repertoire expands, we gradually release them into less controlled and ultimately uncontrolled text. So that's kind of the meaning or the rationale behind decodable text. So what to look for when we're looking at decodable text, again, I mentioned the high proportion of words that are phonetically regular, the phonetic regular relationships between letters and sounds, that close match between those phonetic elements and what the student is actually teaching or has been taught, that those phonetic elements follow an evidence-aligned scope and sequence. Another term I like to think about when I think about what to look for in decodable text is cumulative decodability. So as the students are learning more and more about the code, that text follows that progression and builds on what they're learning. We want to make sure that the text is designed so that students are relying on the text itself, rather than relying on pictures and guessing about what the text might be. I would also say, frankly, we want to make sure our decodable text is engaging and it's natural sounding language. You know, when I first came up as a teacher, there was decodable text, but it was very meaningless. You know, Dan ran, right? But we want to make sure we have text that has natural language and has meaning. And I do have to give a shout out to 95% Group, because we have developed and we've patented actually this design for some really unique decodable text. These are called decodable duos. And these nifty books, first of all, meet what I just said about the what to look fors. And they match the 95% Group scope and sequence of our phonics skills. And they're specifically designed for our K-1 students as they're mastering this code. Now, what makes them unique is that they have two formats. The first format is just words. And this is for instruction and initial practice, right? So what it does is it focuses kids on what we call in-word decoding or eyes on text. Once they've secured that decoding, then they can flip it over and use the other format, which has illustrations, to read for extra practice and enjoyment. So these are really nifty, very popular. Kids love them. Teachers have really responded to these positively. So decodable text, really important for early reading. And I encourage you to check these out.
Laura, thank you so much for that fantastic answer. Just to clarify for everybody, could you define for us what Realia is?
Oh yeah, Realia. So Realia is actual objects. So if we are talking about, if we're, let's say, exploring the sea and bringing in shells and bringing in, a starfish, bringing in actual things that kids can touch and feel and experience to help them with vocabulary and concepts.
All of our resources for this episode are going to be found over on teachercast.net/literacy with Laura. Now, Laura, in our next episode, we're going to be talking all about intervention and implementation. What are some of the things that you look forward to sharing with us on those two topics?
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. You know, this has been a great series because these are real questions that are coming from our listeners, and that makes me really excited. I mentioned in episode one of this series about the importance of implementation. And so really addressing that, which is the bridge from research to practice, is a really important topic that I look forward to digging into.
And we're going to be releasing that next week. Don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button so you can be notified when that episode releases. Laura, thanks so much for your time today, and I look forward to seeing you on our next episode.
Thanks, Jeff. See you then.
And that wraps up this episode of TeacherCast. On behalf of Laura and everybody here on TeacherCast, my name is Jeff Bradbury, reminding you guys to keep up the great work in your classrooms and continue sharing your passions with your students.